Welcome to the first episode of the limited series, Trapped in a Culture. I am your host, Layla Wills. This series contains adult content and graphic language and is not intended for all audiences. Afrika Bambaataa has denied all allegations of child sexual abuse and the sexual abuse of minors. To protect their anonymity, the voices of some people interviewed were altered at their request. Voice identification is at the end of this episode and also in the description.
Everything we thought, lived, breathed, and experienced, you could hear in our music.
That's why it's debatable when people start talking about the origins of hip-hop. But the Bronx was its own dynamic because it was closed out of a lot of situations. And if they had events in the Bronx, it would totally have to be something that was on the other side of what was going down in Manhattan. And the availability was different. Because, you know, you get somebody to go to Harlem, you probably couldn't get somebody to go to the Bronx. So they did their own thing.
Soundtrack of my life may really be putting it lightly. It's more like lifeblood or lifeline. The entire black experience was in that music. And it wasn't only political. Some of it was foolishness. Some of it was Wild Man Steve. And Red Fox Records, and Richard Pryor Records. It's the same thing I say about hip-hop. A lot of times people say, oh, I loved hip-hop when it was positive. And I'm like, when are you talking about? Because we've always been everything. We've never only been one thing.
This was a time when men were men. You know what I mean? Like, we coming straight out of the 70s, and we got heroes like Shaft, and you know what I mean? Isaac Hayes and motherfuckers like that. Like, ain't nobody trying to hear no Fosse Boy business like that. You understand what I'm saying?
In the 60s, you had Vietnam. You had people come back from Vietnam in the early 70s, and when Vietnam supposedly ended in 1972. And black men, especially, were still kind of like treated as not being equal, although there was demands to, like, okay, I fought in the Vietnam War, I suffered injuries, some of us died, I'm coming back, where's my job, where's my community, it's gone down since I left, where am I getting service, where's my chance? And then you had the junkies and the pushers taking also note that they can deal some of this to people in need and create maybe veterans and the junkies. People in a crumbling neighborhood looking for hope and despair, turning them into somebody that kind of needs a fix. The same thing with jails. The statistics say there was 100,000 black men in prison in 1970. Here in the millennium, they say it was close to 2 million. Crime started to happen because of a lot of different reasons that got pushed onto the black community. And the upstate situation that happened in the jails coming from downstate was really toxic at that time, incendiary. Animosity was growing from the disenfranchisement that was taking place.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive.
That was a very, very tough time because I remember being in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, and I remember that pressure from the police. And it was hardcore.
New York at the time was under extreme financial duress, major crisis. The social fabric was tearing. This was only a few years after Dr. King was killed, a few years after Bobby Kennedy was killed, so there was a lot of turmoil. And then you had also the movements. The Black Panther Party was coming to kind of a head at that point. You also had the Latino group, the Young Lords, that came out of the gang movement that were trying to do socially progressive work. But they were up against a very entrenched, embedded system. COINTELPRO was in full effect. Everybody was just trying to figure out ways to survive, and the gangs rose up because people had claimed territories and fighting over the different areas, and it was a rough deal.
This is my brother D. He was the president of the division of the Black Spades, first chapter, first division. He was the reason that Bambaataa came into his division. That's where it all began.
We started off because we couldn't go in different areas of the Bronx. We're Black youth, and we'll get beat up if we go 2-3 blocks up the block, we'll get beat up. You know, no, we had to stop that. So they formed the Black Spades, and we started going around where we wanted to go. And if we had any resistance, we would take care of that resistance, we'll fight back. And once we stopped fighting back, then we was able to go further and further and further. Every part of the Bronx where there were police precincts, there was a Black Spades division, especially at the Fort Apache one. Because that they was giving us the most problems.
Yeah,
those cops were dirty over there. They always want to come in and push us around and try to intimidate us.
We was much larger than the police force.
Yeah, after a while, they had to, just stand back and watch us because it was like a minibus and, very few of them. He was a young spade. I brought him into my division, made him a Black Spade. He was my treasurer. And then when Franklin quit, I needed another war counselor. So I had Bambaataa just do it until I could find somebody more suitable. But he did it. He'd get information for me, and we know about other gangs if we have any problems, and we'll make a decision if we're gonna fight or we're gonna talk it off. He wasn't a vicious person. I wouldn't send him to do anything that's to harm anybody, he wasn't that type of guy.
We were the first ones to come into the Bronx River with a sound system and got the power from Bam's house.
Mario had equipment. He asked Mario for the equipment so he can have his first party because he didn't have no equipment at the time. If you see me being a DJ, you see Mario being a DJ, then you're gonna say, I can do that. So other people start picking it up on it, and they buying equipment, especially after the blackout, when they were broke in the stores and they stole equipment and stuff like that. All DJs start popping up out of the woodworks in, 77, 76. So, that's how it went.
It was Bronx River Organization first. Then it became the Bronx Organization because it started incorporating more of the surrounding and immediate projects. Then by 1975, 1976, now you have the Universal Zulu Nation from theory and the concept that Bambaataa himself came up with. From there, it just took off. First time that I saw him in the meeting at 14 years old, when you see somebody that had that much power and authority, you immediately attracted to them, you immediately amazed by them, you immediately influenced by them. And from everybody at that time, Bambaataa was the man. His character, his personality, his charisma, his humility is what attracted people to him. He had the ability to bring people together in And that's what he did. He had the ability to bring young brothers together, and that's what he did.
The building was 1472, and that was the building adjacent from the center where we all the kids used to go to and all the parties, and it was DJ Mario and Bambada, and it just was a lot of partying back then, even for the children. I don't know exactly when the Dude Kings, which was the little small dance of the little kids, we were all breakdance, and wound up seeing Bambada and Jazzy J. So all of them were like icons to little kids because they were behind the ropes and they having a party, and you know how little kids migrate and stuff like that. So we would always be around him and the other DJs. That's how I actually wound up meeting him. He used to just let all the kids behind the ropes. Some of them, his special kids, I guess you could say he let us behind the ropes. It was loud, and sometimes I was sitting next to the speaker, just, you know, you feeling it. We had the little kids, everything, and it felt like it was safe. So a lot of times it was safe because I had two other cousins, and then like maybe another cousin would come over and visit, and we would all be out there. So it's not like I was out there by myself. It was a lot of children.
This is when my sister and other females in my building, they all were dating members of the Zulu Nation, and Bam used to come around with them. And Bam met my parents. You know, my parents, they liked him because at the time he was doing something positive in their eyes of playing the music and taking kids off the street and having an activity, which was hip hop, to be a part of. So he actually gained the trust of my parents. Prior to us meeting them, we can never really leave the projects. As far as that we can go is to the front of our building and in the park. That was as far as that we can go in my parents' eyes until, you know, we try to sneak away. To have Bam and them come, and that was like this new nation to come into my life, to come into my parents' eyes, it was like someone answered my prayers that I can leave the project, you know? When we finished with the parties and stuff, he would buy us White Castle's hamburgers. White Castle's hamburgers was how we got paid, how the Zulu Nation got paid. And to get a shake, a vanilla shake, you had to be special. And I always got a vanilla shake. You know, I thought it was because, oh, Bam likes me, you know, I'm getting a vanilla shake, you know?
I was really from East Harlem, and in 1979, we moved to the Bronx. Around 1980, I was 9 years old. I met me. It's a good friend of my sister's. I was really into dancing. I really wanted to dance. I wanted to be into a break through, like Zulu Nation or whatever. But I really wanted to dance. I was actually an order man. He started taking me out to parties and saying I was one of his dancers. And I was never one of his dancers. I never even auditioned to be a dancer. You know, that was the hope, but it never happened.
Voices in order of appearance: Chuck D, Public Enemy; Daddy-O, Stetsasonic; Lord Jamar, Brand Nubian; President Richard Nixon; Eitan Edwards from the International Preparedness Network; Cool DJ D, President of the First Division, First Chapter of the Black Spades; Tyrone, the Mixologist; Lord Sharif, former bodyguard to Afrika Bambaataa. Number 4 alleges he was abused by Afrika Bambaataa at the age of 13. Bambaataa would have been 20. Ronald Savage says he was abused at the age of 15. Bambaataa would have been 26. EJ alleges he was abused by Afrika Bambaataa starting at the age of 9. Bambaataa would have been 23. Associate producer for some of the interviews is Lance Shabazz. And I am your host, Layla Wills, and did all of the reporting. Thank you for listening to this first episode of the limited series, Trapped in a Culture. Please be advised this is not a full representation of the upcoming film. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information on the upcoming film, visit trappedinaculture.com.